Welcome to the Safety Podcast, where we connect the health, safety and environment profession to keep you learning, evolving and having a positive impact. Thanks for taking the time to join us for this episode. Let's get started. Hi there, welcome to the Safety Podcast. It's Richard Collins, your host. It's October 19 and we've got a couple of podcasts coming up this month for you as we try to keep this bad boy going. It has been going for nearly a year and a half at this point, and as you know, over the last few weeks, we've sort of been struggling to get traction and get the rate of production up and running again. But we've got some interesting conversations lined up for you. I know you guys find these valuable. I certainly do. This week we have Hugh Maxwell on the show. Hugh is a seasoned HSE professional, and he's also been recognized more recently as the Mentor of the Year from IIRSM, and also received in 2018 the Best International Risk Initiative Award from the same organization. Hugh is kindly joining us on the show today to discuss the role of mentorship in the development of his own career and how it continues to play a role as he moves forward. Hopefully you'll find this conversation with Hugh as valuable as I did. Let's go over and chat to him now. Hugh Maxwell, thank you for coming on to our podcast today to have a chat with us about all the goings on in your world. How are you?
Very well, Richard. Thank you. And thanks for this opportunity for me to share some of my learnings and really to expand the understanding of a lot of other people, I hope, in terms of the importance of having good mentoring and coaching, particularly in this day and age when I think the demands of industry are great and are going to get much greater.
Well, that's a very pertinent point you touched on there. You know, within a lot of our careers, as you say, the demands are greater and greater, and to be able to cope with some of these demands, we have to evolve in the right direction, and taking advice and learning from people that have been through it is obviously key to that. So thank you for coming on. And I knew you from some interaction. I don't know you personally, but I know you from some interaction online. And I, as you know, with myself, I like to network and help people as I can. And you've helped me once or twice. So thanks for that. But just as a means of introducing yourself a bit in a bit more depth to those listening, Hugh, what is your background and what are you up to at the moment? Can you give us a bit of an overview?
With pleasure, Richard. Thank you. Yeah. Hugh Maxwell, 55 years old. Well, young, but I feel 55 years old some days. working primarily in manufacturing and high-risk locations, being steelworks, foundries, supporting really the global steel and foundry business. For over 30 years, I was employed by a company called Vesuvius, who had actually bought out a company called Foseco. So my role was actually global HSE director for really from 2008 through to 2017, where I had global involvement in risk management, both in manufacturing locations in over 40 countries, but also in a lot of customer locations. Prior to which, I left Heriot Watt University 1987 with a degree in chemistry, moved into a role to replace the chief chemist for a company called Foseco. Foseco standing for Foundry Services Company, and that was based 10 miles from home, a little place called Tamworth, Staffordshire. I spent about 15 months in the lab, wasn't really learning what I wanted to learn about industry. So I had the opportunity to move into a three-shift production role, pretty much a crazy time in my life because I just met my wife, and such as a girlfriend, we were going serious. So I was one of the few that actually volunteered rather than conscripted to working on three shifts. But it taught me an awful lot about manufacturing, about a lot more than just the basic chemistry and really the textbook stuff. It taught me really a lot more about not just the actual putting things into practice, the practical application of the theory, but it taught me a lot more about man management, a lot more about interacting with people, the pressures people under in a high risk, high volume production environment. So it was a good footing from which I moved into a QA management role. And then really for the past 20 years plus, I've been much more involved on the health, safety, environment and risk management side. So really that's me in a nutshell.
Excellent. You've had great exposure to high-risk industries, and I'm sure, as you say, that's give you a great footing. Even your experience before you got involved in the health and safety end of it gave you a great sort of perspective as to the different roles and the different pressures within your industry. And from that, you seem to have, as I'm sure you won't mind me acknowledging, you received some recognition as a mentor fairly recently, would I be right in saying?
Yes, well, what's happened, I'll be quite honest with you, I actually left my career within Vesuvius. There was a management restructure, which meant they were taking a level of management out around the end of 2017, which at the same time, my wife was actually diagnosed with breast cancer. So I took 8 months out to basically, from a role where I was traveling 80% of the time. She had a couple of operations. She went through all the treatments. A real big salute and much love and thanks to the NHS for the support she gave us all the way through. Fully recovered now, thankfully. Much luckier than many people. And I was able to, thank you, sir. I was able to get back to work in September to get out from under her feet a bit. I do say under her feet a bit because I've actually got an office at home. So she does actually. Because it's not the tidiest of workplaces, sometimes she calls it my orifice, not my office. So here I'm sitting in on a sunny day in Lichfield in my orifice. Hopefully she's some experiences with you and the rest of the people listening in.
That's a great name for your man cave now. I've never heard that one used before, but congratulate her on that one. And glad to hear she's keeping well. So yes, so from the mentoring perspective then, how did you become sort of a mentor as such, or how did that blend into your career?
I've been doing a lot of coaching and mentoring, and I've received some in the past myself. Of the 10 years, well, from 1990 to 2000, Foseco were actually owned by Burma Castrol, who later went on to be bought out by BP.
Okay.
Very strong theme on marketing, very strong theme on people development. A lot earlier than a lot of the other big industries. So I was fortunate when moving into a management role. I was actually given because I was moving from sort of a UK-based role into a regional role, one of the good practices they instilled was to try and select a mentor for you. Now, coaching and mentoring are slightly different things. Coaching is much more about sort of team performance, sometimes it's remedial. Mentoring is a much more intimate thing, a much more close thing where it's not always just about you and the job. I think it's much more than that. I think it's you, the job, making sure you get the work-life balance right. Mm. But also, I think it's about managing your expectations as well. A lot of us at that time, you're jumping into the job, the role, you don't know what the company's expectations really are of you. You think you're going in there, you've been a big fish in a little pond, you're moving into a much more hostile, more demanding playing arena, and you don't know how to measure success, you don't know what the expectations are or the milestones are. So having somebody in that role sometimes can help. So this happened to me, as I said, really from mid-1990s onwards, at which time myself was called upon not just to develop and support development of others. I did some coaching and mentoring around the globe there onwards. A lot of guys in places like India, real high potential performers, some HSC professionals, some engineers, but really shaping them up so that they could actually, I wouldn't say be Indian, de-Indianize them, but really prepare them for the expectations in the West.
Yeah.
And because we are all culturally different, a lot of this really was not just making them sort of streetwise in terms of the expectations of the role, but really making them streetwise in terms of different intercultural awareness requirements and demands.
Yes, I understand, so,
And again, because I had that, because I had that window of sort of opportunity when I was spending more time sort of getting my wife to and from treatments, I pushed a lot more on my mentoring side. The IRSM, which is the International Institute of Risk and Safety Management, I've been a member of for over 25 years. I've been a fellow of for over about 12 years now. They actually approached a lot of their members and fellows, offering them the opportunity to share their experience in their initial mentoring scheme. And I was part of the initial mentoring scheme. And it's offered not just full members, but different people at different stages of their membership of the organisation to come along and receive some really confidential, confidant, where you can actually, there may be things in your job that frustrate you, which if you had a mentor role in the business and you're not exactly happy with or know your future in the business, sometimes there could be conflict of interest there, or you're not prepared to really open up. Having somebody impartial from outside the organisation sometimes means that you can share more, bear more. Obviously, confidentiality is key, as is trust, which you build over time. And then it's a case of sharing whatever experiences I have. And as the relationship matures, you tend to find it becomes much two-way. And in particularly now, as we've moved away from the sort of Generation X, Generation Y, and we really are into a really aggressive rate of change in industrial demands and expectations, I'm learning a lot from the guys who are called my mentees. I don't think like mentor-mentee. I believe it's a partnership where you work together, you share experiences together. And quite obviously, quite often now, the guys I've been working with us, you know, in this partnership for months, they actually take the lead. They'll say to me, well, how are things going with you this week? What problems and issues have you had? So it's very much a two-way, and it's very much a sounding board. And again, a lot of it and around confidence. And sometimes in the workplace scenario, there's difficult situations where you can't jump in with both feet. You've got to be tactful and think it through. Having that mentor, that coach there as a sounding board sometimes allows you to prepare your approach or even discuss different approaches and the what-if scenario. So you can sometimes come up with a plan A, plan B.
Yeah.
Well, I've been doing this for a long time, as I said. IRSM actually introduced a reward scheme, an award scheme internationally. And in 2017, having been out of work, a couple of my ex-colleagues actually nominated me for the Best International Risk Initiative. So I was humbled to receive that in 2017. May 2018, I was awarded that, and unbeknown to me. So having that in itself, you know, at a time when obviously my wife's health was the first priority, was a real motivator for me to keep giving back, which I did. One of the guys I was mentoring, I won't mind me mentioning his name, a guy named Grant Thompson, who's a very good HSE professional in his own right before I came along. He was actually listed on the Health and Safety at Work magazine's 40 Under 40 Achievers. And I was working with him, nominated him because he is a star, he's out there. And I think, I don't know whether he was feeling sorry for me or what, but he actually put me forward and nominated me for the Mentor of the Year Award.
As I say, Hugh, what goes around comes around, and it sounds like very much it's become more of almost a peer-to-peer support system that you have there, and I can see that there's, you know, real value in that for people. So it's interesting. Yeah, it's interesting to hear your perspective, and even though you were going through a personal, you know, personal hardship yourself and a different scenario in your personal life, you were able to use that opportunity to actually give back to those in the industry who were sort of coming up, you know, in their development as well. So that's really interesting. I have another question, but before we go on to that, you're in a new role now, which is as we were discussing previously, it's a global role. Did your experiences and your abilities and knowledge around mentoring staff within organizations and across organizations help you get into your new position, would you say?
I would say, without a doubt, I'm actually working as global environmental compliance leader. Mm-hmm. Sorry, protection and compliance leader for a brilliant company called ESAP. They really are forward thinking. They really are committed to the development of people. Whereas my primary function is actually focusing on sustainability and environment, which is a thing that's close to my heart as well.
Yeah.
I am actually involved and engaged with a lot of the HSE professionals, particularly in Europe, supporting their development and needs. So I would say, yes, the fact I've got this mentoring experience and passion, really, it is something that I'm using and sharing within the business environment wherever I can. And I think more and more now, Richard, it's not just having the right piece of criteria on the bit of paper. It's developing these soft skills. And I think a lot of these soft skills, as well as coming from sort of a management role and from extending your role into things outside of work, leading rugby teams, being involved in committees, charity organisations, work for the church, all these different things where you can actually take on more responsibility outside the scope of your role. I really do think the mentoring role in itself helps you sometimes to enable and think and learn about yourself and development of your soft skills.
For sure. You're not going to mention that word soft skills again, are you? That term soft skills. I think people are getting sick of hearing that on the Safety Podcast. So they are.
I think nowadays more than ever. And I'll come back to this from another perspective, mate. That I think because of the rate of change and the pressures on people nowadays, and particularly the big push now, I know I'm perhaps harping on again, about the S word, the stress issue.
Yeah, no, go ahead.
I think sometimes having this confidant, having this coaching, mentoring arrangement, being prepared to open up, but also as you move up the ladder, being able to see early warning signs in people. Yeah. in terms of when they're overloaded. I really do think, you know, as well as having the technical competence, having this well-roundedness, having this ability or this inner sense mm-hmm. to know if you're pushing too far. Nobody likes to turn around and say they're a bit too much off.
Yeah.
You know, the job's too much for them. So sometimes it's a case of you having to work with people and sort of calibrate and gauge, you know, is it too much for them? Do I need to give them that support?
Yeah.
And particularly in some other cultures, for example, like the Indian and Chinese culture, the Chinese guys never like, they're great people, they never like to say no to you. The Indian people, sometimes they'll say no, but behind that, they may be struggling to really sometimes comprehend or sometimes really understand what our expectations are, what we see as being a measure of success. So by having this bit of trust, by having this deeper understanding, I think it can make us more effective, because as leaders in safety, as agency managers, ultimately our success is judged on how well we can actually deliver our message and share the effectiveness of others.
Yeah, I'm a huge believer in that, Hugh, and I think what you're touching on there is vastly important across all industries. You're mentioning there, you know, about the ability to recognize it in other people. It's as important to recognize it in yourself as well, and sometimes we forget about that.
I fully agree with that one, Richard. I think, you know, that's the thing. And looking back in hindsight, many times, particularly in my previous role when I had the global role, 1 year, 2011, I spent 8 weekends of the year where I wasn't actually traveling or getting ready to travel. And that's absolutely crazy in terms of work-life balance. And whilst you think you're effective, if you're jumping off a plane, I mean, actually, ironically, I was awarded my fellowship from IOSH. I stood them up twice and I thought they were trying with their patience. I actually got off a plane from the States and went for my IOSH interview at Leicester. Because the young lady who was really an assistant, but also a HSC coordinator, she knew that if I didn't attend this time, one, I'd probably not be offered the fellowship again. But I realised my diary is that crazy. So I actually got myself along for the fellowship interview. And it wasn't until a bit later on that I actually sat back and realised work-life balance. And around 2013, when we had other situations in our personal lives where I had to take some time out, my wife needed an operation on her ankle. Me being the eternal optimist, thought, oh, a couple of weeks, she'll be back playing in goal. Unfortunately, she had a problem on her Achilles heel. They had to detach the tendon, and she was out of action for about 9 months. Mm. And when you rely on somebody, I mean, my wife basically, I've been with her 30 years, you know, and we're 30 years married this year, and we're, you know, we're well happy married, to be honest with you. I make plenty of jokes about her being the first wife, keeping her on her toes, but she says to me, I deserve a saintdom. I don't know about being the first wife. But, you know, sometimes you take so much for granted. And one of the things I try and always emphasize in the mentoring is the fact that it's not just about your ambitions and your job. It's about getting this balance right, not just in terms of your personal development, in terms of your career development, but most importantly, in terms of your whole home life and the commitments to those that you love and care about and love and care about you.
That's, I mean, I don't know what to say to follow that up. I think it's really important for people to recognize that. And it's really valuable for you to give us that reflection, Hugh, because as you know yourself, you can get sort of into these habits of just working in professions like our own, where we're, you know, we're having to care for people and we're seen as the person who, you know, to go to when it comes to supporting employees and, you know, keeping them happy and managing stress and all the rest of it. We do often forget about our own personal well-being. And something just to go back on from that as well that interests me, you're talking about this rate of change within industry. Hugh, if you don't mind, could you give us a bit more of an insight into what you're seeing there and what you think the impact is going to be or what it is already?
Richard, I think for all of us on this call now, I think we all appreciate day to day, right, in our career and our development. The expectations in the workplace are much greater now in terms of turning things around. Interaction in terms of people, in terms of IT and technologies such as artificial intelligence, virtual reality, the rate of change is phenomenal. We're just in Industry 4, and if you look back to the Industrial Revolution, the first, then the second and the third, the rate of change and the exponential growth, the tools and technologies that are coming to play over the next, well, to date already, but over the next few years, are going to be phenomenal. And a big part of that is going to be reliant on us being able to cope with this rate of change, with the cope with the depth of change as well, the depth of reliance on technology. Gone are the days when you throw labour at it. We're looking much more now. We've gone away from automation. We're moving towards computerisation, and now really we're moving to the situation where the tables are turned, and we're relying and trusting much more in the technology, which is at a much more advanced state than we are. So when it comes to artificial intelligence and how we apply it in the workplace in future, there's going to be a major change in how we have to accept it and rely upon it to do our jobs. Now, that's not necessarily a bad thing, because a lot of the industries I've worked in, a lot of the fatalities and severe accidents could have been prevented had we made better use of things like artificial intelligence to do these inspections, to go in there and make sure that the workplace is safe beforehand, or to assimilate the work environment, to make sure that the people we're putting into these environments are both competent but also confident to do the work. Because when something goes wrong in these environments, they must be conditioned and they must know how to react and respond, really, if they're going to stay safe and protect others. And we've not had these tools and technologies available before. So I think the way, and we're not just talking in high-risk environments. When you look at things like fire safety, you look at things like inspecting, work at height, high-risk inspections, even high-risk solutions in terms of repairing, we were going to be so much reliant on technology compared to than we ever had before. So it's technology is taking over, and it's really important that we're actually attuned to be part of that and mentally prepared and able to cope with this type of change.
Yeah, I think you're right. And maybe from an organizational point of view, there's a major question in terms of, who's responsible for recognizing the impact of that change. We have an important position to play when it comes to actually raising awareness on how that impacts the operations of a business. And I guess what we're talking about now in terms of supporting each other through that change and helping each other recognize that certain things that we need to be aware of and cope with and help each other to understand is really an important part of it. The mentoring part in this conversation around supporting each other, whether that's peer-to-peer or, from someone who's got lots of experience to those just coming into the profession, for me is a really interesting conversation. For people, Hugh, who have an interest in getting in touch with those who want to mentor or, become a peer-to-peer partnership or contact, what sort of steps do you think would you advise people to take?
Well, one of the things I was really pleased to see is both IOSH and IRSM are very keen to use ambassadors as such, who they've created their own mentoring schemes, which I think is very important if you're part of those associations. But I think as well, the strength, for example, the way you and I have bonded, Richard, through LinkedIn, the strength of having this type of community available. If we see people out there who've got these skills, the skill set who have been experienced, we shouldn't be scared to approach them and have discussions with them, see what advice they've got. Are they available to be mentored? Are they the right selection for you, or do they know somebody who could actually fit your requirements? One of the good things I've found with the IRSM, they don't just assign somebody to the mentor. We have a look at each other's profiles first. We have a couple of calls first. And again, I'm quite extrovert. Some people are much more introvert. It's important that not just your skill set, but in terms of your personality traits, your personality match meet each other. Do you want somebody who's overly pushy as a mentor? Or again, somebody who's overly introvert as a mentor, when you've got somebody who's the other side of the spectrum when it comes to their expectations. So I think getting that right first and foremost is quite important. But when you come back to, coming back to what you said about mentoring and the key importance of mentoring going forward, I don't think we should be scared of this change. I think we should embrace it. And I think, as you said, we as safety leaders, we're going to be part of the enablers. We're going to be part of the people who have to help the other people accept it. So I think in many respects, making us more aware, making us able to be able to support the management of change process and the engagement of others. And this is where, as I said, mentoring, being mentored or acting as a mentor ourselves at whatever stage in our career, I see this not just as evolving now. I see this as an ongoing thing, and it's something which I've always been a strong believer in. We can all learn things from each other, whatever stage of career people are at. I go to developing countries still and developing businesses, and I still walk away having learned lots and lots about when we think we can do everything. It's not the case. there's a lot we can learn from each other. So I think you said, by making use of this mentoring arrangement, this mentoring agreement with the trust and confidentiality, I think it's a powerful tool, powerful medium. And I'd strongly advise, I mean, if there's people out there, I mean, my background's very much from science, HSC. We shouldn't restrict it to that. We should consider it wherever we're at in our career, and in particular at times if we're considering career changes. But I think one of the big things about mentoring is that sometimes it allows you to set your short, medium and long-term aspirations and ambitions. But equally important, things don't always go to plan. I think sometimes having that mentoring relationship enables you to put together a plan B. And sometimes it enables you to prepare yourself better for if things don't work out the way you want them to.
I couldn't agree with you more, Hugh. I think you touched on a lot of really important aspects of networking amongst people within the profession and across different job roles and different parts of industry. As you say, you know, just as you and I have bonded, and for me personally, all the people that I've met through taking a risk and starting this podcast, for instance, you know, this will be the 29th or 30th podcast interview that I've done. So, you know, I've had a personal conversation and relationship built with each person that's been on it. And it's been hugely valuable. And I'm working with some of those people now. The value of that networking continues, and we're there to help one another, as you just said. And it's something that I said to a group that I've set up on LinkedIn just recently, is that, and I intentionally didn't make it an exclusive group because I want to include people from all different backgrounds. I don't believe that just because you're at a certain level of your career or whatever, that you're more, you know, knowledgeable or you have less to learn than anyone else. I said to them, you know, everybody can contribute, everybody can learn from one another, regardless of what your position or background is. Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more on that. So I think that's an excellent summary to end on. I'd like to thank you for joining us on the Safety Podcast. This has been a really cool conversation.
It's been a real pleasure, Richard. And again, I look forward to many more. I do appreciate the work you and others put into the podcast, and it's nice to be able to give a bit back sometimes.
Well, you're obviously very good at doing that, so keep up the good work, Hugh, and hopefully we'll chat to you soon.
All the best, everybody. Thanks, Richard. Stay safe.
That's it for our conversation with Hugh. A few things that I picked up on that come up in the chat with Hugh that I thought were important. He pointed out that mentorship, and probably contrary to what many of us think, and I agree with him very much in this, that it should be a partnership. And a lot of the time when we think mentorship, particularly if we're sort of looking for someone to mentor us, we often think of someone that's much more senior, and that almost creates a barrier or an imaginary level of difficulty in getting someone, you know, suitable to be your mentor or to go through that process with you. I think if we look at it more as a partnership, that kind of opens up our eyes to the opportunities that are out there. And there are so many people that work in different industries that maybe are the same level as you, that you can share learning with and, you know, use as a sounding board, as Hugh was saying there. I do it myself. Since I've started the Safety Project, you know, there's a couple of people that I tie in with on a regular basis, and it's so helpful, especially when you're having, you know, you're going through difficult times. Often you'll be having the same problems as those other people in the same position, and that's where you're able to support each other and use each other as a sounding board to get through those struggles. So that's something that I thought was really important. Obviously, as you heard, Hugh has used mentorship to really help his career in terms of his own personal development. And he did say that he thinks it's resulted in his latest role being out there and known as someone who is very much a supportive figure to those around him in the profession. Just really, you know, demonstrates that he has the ability to support others' development. And obviously, if you're able to do that and able to demonstrate that, then you become a much more suitable candidate for more senior positions in the HSE field and otherwise as well. Another point that Hugh mentioned, which I feel is something that we shouldn't overlook, is that our success is usually judged on how well we can deliver our message, whatever that may be. So in essence, it really is determined by how good of a communicator that we are. And if you're not developing your skills as a communicator or developing and evolving your message to suit the audience that you're trying to communicate to, then you're going to find it difficult to really perform and become successful in this way. So I think that's something that is really worth reflecting on for us all. We also talked then about our own personal well-being. Sometimes we get caught up in doing so much work that we have the perception that we're being effective. And there's a big difference between the perception of being effective and actually being effective. And a lot of it stems from our own well-being and our own ability to actually carry out our work and support the people in the network around us. So sometimes you have to take a step back and look from, you know, a 360 degree aerial view of what is actually going on. And Hugh gave us the example there of, in one of his roles recently, he had spent only 8 weeks where he was without actually traveling or planning to travel in the week following, which it just became the norm for him. And with that, there was huge impact on his own personal well-being and his personal life. So that's, again, something that we can all think about, no matter whether you're doing a lot of traveling or whether you're just working a lot of long hours, and how that impacts with your work-life balance. That leads on as well to taking things for granted. Sometimes we do take what we have around us and what we've achieved and what we've built around us, including our personal lives, our families and our loved ones, for granted. And when we're focusing on the well-being of others and looking after people in our roles, we often overlook, as I was saying earlier, our own personal well-being and take for granted the things that we have. We have to look after those first and foremost. Otherwise, we can't continue with the rest and everything that's external to that. So that's something as well that's worth reflecting on. And that's why this conversation, I think, did, you know, become so valuable. Hugh done a great job of linking the rate of change in industry when it comes to technology, how that is impacting us both now and in the future, and the importance of mentorship in helping us through that process. So there's lots to think about there, guys. If you do want to reach out to either Hugh Maxwell or myself, please do so. We'd love to continue these conversations with you. I hope this podcast was interesting and helpful for you, and hopefully we'll catch you next time. Thanks once again for joining us for this episode. We really hope you find this content valuable. If you would like to provide us with some feedback, please remember to take a second to review, subscribe, and of course, if you can, share it with anyone who may find it useful, and we'll look forward to you joining us for the next episode. For more help and resources, don't forget that you can visit us at safety.com. Until next time, good luck.